Here's a poem by Arthur Osborne, just four stanzas, based on verse 28 of Bhagavan's marital garland of letters.
Does he give the verse that it's about?
The verse 28.
He doesn't know, but
it was. No, but it sounds like the verse.
Though. Okay.
I sought to devour thee, come now and devour me. Then there will be peace, Arunachala. You bade me give all for you. Take now the giver too. Survive alone, Arunachala. Let now the deception end. There was no lover or friend apart from thyself, Arunachala. Now that at last I know all this a magic show, let it dissolve in thee, Arunachala. Paul Reps, he has a small book. 16 pages, called Ask a Potato. It's a book review here. This is Professor K. Swaminathan. He starts off his book review with a poem. Reps is ripping, style staccato, figures gripping, well boiled, well oiled, spiced and garnished, salted to taste, nothing to waste, to be munched and masticated, not swallowed in haste. Everything we ought to know from editor A.O. is seen to grow on this potato. A.O. Arthur Osborne, yeah?
A.O.
We have something here, misrepresentation. And the April issue of Mother India contains a lengthy and appreciative account of the life of and teaching of Ramana Maharshi. Unfortunately, however, the writer of it has fallen into the so common mistake of regarding the experience of self-inquiry that came to him spontaneously when he was in his youth of 17 as the beginning only of his quest. So they have another. And there is the president of the Sivananda, Divine Life Society,
Chidananda.
I think he's no more now, right? Mm. He must have been, he's pretty old. If he died, he was probably near 100. Mm. Mm. I met him in Calcutta.
Yeah.
He used to travel all over. I don't know who's the president now, Divine Life Society. Bobby Shakam, the Kumbhabhi Shakam of the Samadhi Hall, I think, and the Gopuram they built over it. There are all these big people there.
Room is the canopy.
Lieutenant Governor of Pondicherry.
Well, the Gopuram's on the roof, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you ever walk around on the roof?
Yeah. When we made 33 pieces of the statue, we made molds. Uh-huh. We took them up on the roof to dry.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Introducing Bhagavan's attendants. You have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 in the picture here. Rangaswami, Swami Satyananda, P.P. Ramachandra Iyer, Venkataratnam, Ramakrishna Swami, and someone.
Madhava.
And Sivananda Swami.
Madhava's not in there.
No, he's dead.
Oh, he's dead.
When I wrote the... He died in, what, 1942?
Mm. Here's died of hernia.
What?
He died of hernia.
No.
Didn't he?
They think he may even poison himself. They're not sure.
Oh, really?
Because he left the ashram and he didn't go.
He was very upset.
Very upset.
Yeah.
He said he's miserable wherever he went.
Yeah.
Then they don't know for sure, but.
Somebody died of hernia. Hmm? I was reading it. Somebody died of hernia.
Probably lots of people.
I didn't know people died of hernia, but well, I guess before they could fix it.
Yeah, they, if it gets caught. Yeah. You can die, right? There's only a...
Strangulated.
Strangulated, yeah. But that just is, you know, he got sick all of a sudden, perspired, right down and died. Mm-hmm. They don't know, but Kunjaswami went there too, you know, when he died. Mm-hmm. But he was reading that wherever he went, he was miserable, after he left the ashram. And I guess they wouldn't let him back for some reason, I don't know.
I thought Bhagavan said, why didn't he come here? We would have taken care of him.
No, he's not. No, somebody else you're thinking of.
Yeah.
Here's a glance of grace by Sri Muruganar. Let us meditate on Ramana, the teacher of reality, who dwells within my inmost self as I. Bringing in full measure the joy of silence, ending the delusive pride of a divided self's self-love. In one unbroken silence, let us dwell on the twin feet of the Guru, glorified above all kings, because his glance of grace revealed the hill of bright awareness, shining in a world troubled by darkness of desire. Dear devotees, avid for grace, our master is an ocean. Take and hold your fill. Approach him freely. Minds and hands wide open. Drink to your heart's content. Defeated and frustrated, do not reel beneath fate's blows. Turn your eyes, your thoughts, towards those sovereign feet, which can transmute a devotee into Shiva radiant. Like a tree which on a scorching day offers cool shade to every comer by nature, not by choice, even so he stands calm, immutable, impartial, liking or disliking none, but saving all who reach his feet. Letters to the editor. The Maharshi's teachings. Two forms. I should like to know, this is Jose Ortego Coco, Granada, Spain. I should like to know whether the Maharshi recommended other forms of meditation when people found difficulty with concentration on the heart and the self-inquiry. I believe he said, there are two ways to be followed, either ask yourself, who am I, or trust in a guru. I do not understand what he meant when he said, trust in a guru. Inasmuch as is my case and many others, there is not one present. The Maharshi often said, there are two ways, ask yourself who am I, or submit. That means either dissolve the illusion of an ego, or surrender it completely to God or Guru, to universal being, or to its conscious manifestation in human form. This can mean basing one's whole life entirely on the dictum, "Thy will be done." Spelled thy wrong, but "they will be done."
"They will be done," you say "they."
Yeah, he's saying, instead of "thy," but "they." I know it's a mistake, you know. If it is interpreted as surrender to a guru in human form, one should be very careful, because there are many claimants to the status of authentic and divinely illuminated gurus, but few valid ones. The Maharshi also said that it is not necessary for the guru to be in human form. We have abundant evidence that since shedding that form, he has not ceased to be the guru and to guide and support those who submit to him. Here's letter two. When to begin? How does one tell when the soul is right to meditate on "Who am I?" Mrs. Lambert, Sydney, Australia. Editor. Practicing self-inquiry is the best training for practicing. It is not discovering anything new or strange outside yourself, but only dwelling on the real self of you. Therefore, Bhagavan said, in this method, the final question is the only one, and is raised from the very beginning. He never prescribed any other introductory methods, nor did he authorize anyone else to. Question, how to begin? Another one. That was when, and this is how. For years I have read only about the Maharshi. Nothing else impresses me any longer. But my concentration is very bad, and I am afraid the vichara is not for beginners. It is said in Moni Sadhu's book on concentration that one must first learn concentration before one can start to use the vichara. That would mean that I should have to spend years learning if I were ever to master this. But is it not possible that the vichara itself may be the way to concentration? Or am I not at all fitted for this path? Miss Olga Gilgin, Schwarzenberg, Switzerland. Editor. It is quite incorrect to state that any preliminary exercises in concentration are necessary before starting self-inquiry. The Maharshi never said so, never prescribed any such exercises, and never authorized anyone to make such a statement. On the contrary, he definitely stated, in this method, the final question is the only one, and it is raised from the very beginning. Self-inquiry teaches concentration while at the same time eliminating the ego, whereas other exercises in concentration do not eliminate the ego and may even strengthen it. Four. The Maharshi and Krishnamurti, I request you to kindly explain the difference between Bhagavan Sri Ramana Maharshi's teaching and that of J. Krishnamurti. This is from someone named Ramana Das. Should know it, right? From Dharwar, Mysore State. Why? How will it help you? Not at all, unless you regard teaching in the traditional Hindu way as a basis for practice. If you do, then try both. Krishnamurti tells you to follow no path and no guru, but just be in a state of effortless, choiceless awareness. Well, try that first. If you can do it, well and good. This is what Bhagavan said. Otherwise, practice is necessary. Practice of deliberate meditation.
You read a letter just like this, didn't you?
Well, probably. I read everything many times. Well, try that first. If you can do it, well and good. You need nothing else. But I have never yet met anyone who could. If not, then the Maharshi tells you either to practice self-inquiry or submit to God or Guru. So try that. Letter 5. Be changeless. This is from a guy named Unworthy.
Oh,
from Ahmedabad. Gujarati. Way back in 1938, I visited Ramanashram for the first time and last time. I was there for 4 days, during which time Rajendra Prasad, the late president of India, and Sri Jamnalal Bajaj also visited the ashram. I was in a depressed and dejected mood. On the last day of my stay in the ashram, I happened to be sitting just opposite Sri Bhagavan at lunchtime. I took courage and took my courage in both hands and complained, "I have been here for 4 days, but there's no change in me." Bhagavan replied, "Be changeless." "I shall be grateful if you or someone else will write a short commentary on Sri Bhagavan's 2 words and elucidate the secret implicit in the injunction." So this is, 30 years later, or 29 years later. He's been thinking of this for 29 years. Unworthy. Okay, editor. "No secret and no commentary needed on it. The restless ego complained that it saw no change and was told to give up the craving for change and abide in and as the changeless self." Letter 6, Japa. "The April issue of the Mountain Path contained some very good articles, but a whole issue devoted to one theme tends to make them for monotony and repetition." That's what japa is, right? "I look forward to the return to the policy of general issues. There was a letter in the April by Mr. Marie on self-inquiry and japa. Could we have more information, either from yourself or someone else, about the significance and importance of japa? I believe that Sri Ramana Maharshi recommended it to those for whom self-inquiry was unsuitable or uncongenial. Is it so?" William Gillespie, Lanarkshire, Scotland. From time to time, we will have more articles on japa. The Maharshi seldom, if ever, actually recommended it, but when asked, he gave permission to use it. Anything that keeps the mind turned calmly and one-pointedly in the right direction is good." Next. A Hindu journal from Jagannath Chattopadhyaya in Rishra.
Where does that come from, the name? You go by the Yaya on the end.
Oh, that's Bengalis.
Oh, okay.
And this is Risha. Remember that Sanat used to come with his family? He came with Prahlad Brahmachari. His name was Sanat Kumar, I think. He was from the same town, Rishra.
Where did he go?
Remember Prahlad Brahmachari?
I'm not sure.
He came, must have been 75 or so. You were there at that time.
Yeah.
You met him. We went to Athena's house.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah.
And there was one Bengali guy who came with him.
Okay. The young man?
Yeah, so he was from Rishra.
Okay.
I went there later one time.
Huh.
This is in Hubli. So they're Bengali. I earnestly look forward to seeing my article about Naga Baba with the picture of the sage adorn your page. But instead, I find articles by writers like Wei Wu Wei, Sagittarius, that's Arthur Osborne, Abdullah Qutbuddin, that's also Arthur Osborne. When he wants to write some Muslim or Islam, you know, uses that name. I do not object to their fine articles being published, but I do think that the Mountain Path published under the auspices of Bhagavan Ramana Maharshi ought to contain more about the teaching of Bhagavad. Indeed, I agree with Sri Satyanarayana Tandon of Kanpur, whose letter to you appeared in the April 1967, when he said, "Is not Hinduism expected to predominate in the journal? Only instead of Hinduism, I should say Advaita. However, if the article on Naga Baba and the picture of the sage can be recovered from the heaps of papers in your custody awaiting publication, they may kindly be sent back to me." He's upset that he published it. Editor, I take this opportunity to apologize not only to the writer of this letter, but to other contributors also who have been kept waiting. I like to publish one article about some saint, mystic, or guru in each issue, and one in the series, How I Came to the Maharshi. However, I have quite a waiting list, and some are kept waiting. On the other hand, I'm not going to clear off arrears by suspending other matters and filling one whole issue with them. Indeed, the three writers referred to in this letter are very popular with our readers. I can only ask contributors to have patience.
That's nice.
Mm-hmm. And then Professor K. Swaminathan, he writes a letter here. You know, this is Shanta or Nitya's grandfather.
Oh, okay.
You know, Nitya Anand's wife. And he was a prominent person. Indira Gandhi gave him the job of compiling the collected works of Mahatma Gandhi.
Oh, okay.
99 volumes he did.
Oh, okay.
And with Indira Narasimhan's brother.
Oh,
they worked on it together, you know.
Okay.
And
that is Jyoti's mama.
Yeah, Jyoti's mama. He's no more. But I knew him.
How is Narasimhan doing?
Last I heard, he was starting eating again and everything.
Oh, cool.
So he's eating, he's doing better now. He hadn't eaten like for a long time. When we went that day,
he started. Yeah, but when he had pneumonia, he can't.
Yeah. It was like 10 days or something. So Professor K. Swaminathan.
Okay.
A Hindu Journal, number 2. I read the April issue almost at a sitting, as I found it so deftly constructed and every piece in it so absorbingly interesting. You know, he was also one of the editors here later on, you know. Father Merton, Dom Griffiths, Wei Wo Wei, Dorothy Dana, alone, all are here again in full strength and good form. This time Sagittarius and Qutbuddin both come very close to Advaita. Starkey is splendid, and Joel Goldsmith. Dr. TNK's quotation from Bhagavan's Disposition is of the utmost human value and incidentally provides an answer to Satya Narayana Tandon's complaint that the mountain path is not sufficiently Hindu. When one admires a beautiful lotus, one doesn't dwell lovingly on the mud in the pond out of which it grew. It was because he rose above and left behind the individual and divisive categories that Ramana became Bhagavan. However, correspondence sections should contain brickbats as well as bouquets. Professor, yeah. Exactly, that's how it works. He was a big Gandhian, but he came to Bhagavan, you know, in the big devotee of Bhagavan. Hindu Journal, Part 3. This is from C. Gordon, Westerland, Portland, Oregon. This one sentence, more or less. I especially enjoyed the articles, How I Came to the Maharshi, Arrows from a Christian Bow, and also Letters to the Editor. That's it. And here's one on ritual. By Komachi Singh, Radhakund, Mutra District. Radhakund? Must be North India somewhere, right? Maybe. Would you please make the following points clear? One, is it a fact that Brahmins dine separately from non-Brahmins there and that caste is observed? Two, what about samskaras, individual ashram life, posthumous rites, cremation, jala samadhi, or bhu samadhi?
What's that?
Bhu.
Bhu. Bhu is the body.
Mm-hmm. And jala is water.
Jala is fire. So yeah, burn the body or bury it.
Oh, cremation or burial.
Can it also be done for those who are not sannyasins?
It is jala, jala.
Water is not like
jala. Jala, jala. Jala is water. Jala is water. Jala is fire.
Three, for myself, I want the proper discipline observed by the sadhaka. No shrad kriya of the smartartha method is necessary for them, is it? Okay. Editor, it is true that Brahmins and non-Brahmins dined separately here and always did in Bhagavan's lifetime, but not anymore. You know, it's all mixed. That's all gone.
When did it?
Because the crowd became too much. You know?
Yeah, it's so much. Yeah.
You can still see those dividers in the old hall. You see those dividers there.
Yeah.
When they're having tea, you can see those. It was not his mission in life to revolutionize social conditions. He expected each person to live according to the conventions of his family, social and religious background, unless they took sannyas, which he did not encourage people to do. No general rule is laid down for the rites appropriate to all sadhakas here. Some of them are not even Hindus. It might be best if you were to pay a visit here and see for yourself how things are. Editor. Here's a ritual. Again, another question by D. Sharma from Varanasi. Is it necessary to paint faces and foreheads with ashes and sandal paste in order to become a bhakta? If not, why do the so-called religious people do it? Editor, no kind of ritual is necessary, but many kinds of ritual may be helpful. It would be wrong in the present circumstances for anyone who finds ritual helpful to insist that everyone should practice it. But it is equally wrong for someone who does not find it helpful to object to others who do practice it. Bhagavan did not approve of either kind of intolerance. Mystic Experience. Letter from Miss S. Bapat, Pune. In your January number, Dr. R. Futscherberger writes on Brief Eternity, giving his experience and describes it as a glimpse of realization. I'm interested in this because I had exactly the same type of experience while walking in Pondicherry a few years ago. When I referred the matter to the two Swamis, considered to have reached the stage of self-realization, one said that it was not of much importance, except that it showed the ardent desire to reach that ideal. And the other said that it was only a mystic experience and had nothing to do with realization. I would like to know how Bhagavan would have interpreted and whether any other of his devotees have had such experiences. Editor, what do you mean when you speak of swamis who are considered to have reached the stage of self-realization? Self-realization is not a stage, but the final and natural state. Mystic experiences, which are pre-glimpses to it, with or without simultaneously outer awareness, are not uncommon. A number of Bhagavan devotees have had them. They may come to people who are not advanced on the path or have not even set foot on it. The poet Tennyson sometimes had such an experience, which he described in a letter to a friend, and he did not even know that there was a path to follow. Bhagavan sometimes quoted it or referred to it as a true experience. Such an experience is very aptly called a brief eternity, since it is timeless, and therefore eternal while it lasts, but a brief duration. It is just its brief duration which distinguishes it from the state of Bhagavan, with whom it was constant and unbroken, whatever he was doing outwardly. That is a very rare thing. And an experience such as Dr. Fuchsberger describes can be said to be not very important insofar as it does not necessarily betoken an advanced state of development, and it may be harmful if it leads a person to think too highly of himself. But in itself, it is undoubtedly a true experience. The thing to do is to try to make it constant by removing the traces of ego which obstruct it, by keeping the mind constantly prepared for its arrival. That is the meaning of Christ's injunction to be always alert and expecting him, because he comes like a thief in the night. Editor. Predestination by Sararaz Narasimha Rao, Palakol. Palakol must be Andhra Pradesh or something. There is a quotation from Valmiki Ramayana: only cowards and weaklings take shelter under destiny. Is that a fallacy? Now they're asking all kinds of questions. Before they used to just write, you know, kudos about the journal. Editor, if it was a fallacy, it would not be in Valmiki Ramayana, as is explained in the editorial of our April issue and also by our contributor A. Quitbuddhan, which is himself.
Oh, what a name to choose.
On page 130, nobody knows what is destined for him, and therefore everybody must take responsibility for his actions, and if he fails, cannot lay the blame on destiny. He has no right to say, how can I succeed if it is my destiny to fail? Because he does not know that it is his destiny to fail. Clarification by E.V. Muniratnam Guntur. May I request a classification by the learned author of the article Pain and Pleasure? In line 5 of the last paragraph, the word until should be as long as, or alternatively, the words cease to should be inserted before identify ourselves. Similarly, in the 12th line, the word should be rapture rather than rupture.
That's a fine mistake.
Yeah. Editor, thank you for pointing out the mistake, with as long as it ought to have been corrected in proofreading. In the second sentence, however, rupture is correct. It means a breach of consciousness, a switch to a different mode of consciousness. Okay. Wow, we got so many letters in this issue. We're going on. It's about photographs. You know, they used to, you know, color photographs with oils and cotton and everything. Mm-hmm. Like the ones we have in Nova Scotia mm-hmm. on the altar, they're hand colored.
Wow. Ganeshan used to do that.
Not Ganeshan, there was somebody, Sayadas.
He also did it though. He said Ganeshan, he did it in his spare time.
I learned how to do it once. Also. Photographs. It seems to me very objectionable to touch up Bhagavan's photograph. They're more beautiful in the natural state. As a photograph on the jacket of your book, Ramana Maharshi and the Path of Self-Knowledge. That is a precious picture. Miss Sally Marlin. I knew this lady, Sally Marlin. Well, I don't know if I met her, but we used to correspond quite a bit, Sally mm-hmm. Marlin. Remember, I think she died. Editor, we never touch up Bhagavan's photographs in the ordinary sense of the word. I specifically mentioned in my reference to reconditioning on page 76 of the January issue that it refers only to negatives that have got damaged. How do you like the front piece of this issue? There's a big, you know, wee-woo-wee is getting into it here. Valid acting and invalid reacting. And then wait, will we again? I don't know if it's a letter. It's not a letter with an answer. Now they come on to hallucinogenic drugs again.
Oh, okay. We're in that era.
I recently noticed in the mountain path for July 1966 your comments on hallucinogenic drugs and spiritual growth, and your request for information from a medical man who had experience with them. This is John. Dr. John Aiken. I wholly agree with this is, you know, that Baba Ram Dass, Richard Albert. He got kicked out of Harvard because of experimenting with these.
Yeah, and Timothy Leary.
Yeah. I wholly agree with your statement that glimpses of reality or self-realization must be maintained by the usual spiritual discipline. I have been a student of Ramana's Way for several years, having started with your books dealing with the teachings. For me, Ramana and Huang Po, I have John Blofeld's translation, the Zen teaching of Huang Po, seem to point the way better than most. But each of us must walk that way for ourselves. Some 6 years ago, in a medical journal, I read an article by Dr. Humphrey Osman. At the time, medical director of Saskatchewan Provincial Hospital, this is Canada, in which mention was made of the mystical type of experience which many persons seem to have when under the influence of such psychedelic, consciousness-expanding substances as LSD, mescaline, and peyote. I became interested for this reason, and since that time, we have used one or the other of these with some 200 people for the purpose of inducing religious insight. Under proper conditions, it would seem that a deep understanding beyond concepts is achieved by a large percentage of subjects. As a psychiatrist at UCLA says, quote, to see oneself and the world from a new perspective, even for a short time, can be most helpful, unquote. We insist that in order to maintain this new awareness, it is necessary to apply the insights in action to change old habit patterns, for which there is no substitute for the recognized spiritual disciplines. One of our subjects was an atheist. He said, in my first experience, I saw God. In my second one, I became God. You, unlike many here, will understand this statement. He has spent the past 2 years in an ashram in India with Amar Jyoti at Pune. When used properly, we have seen no damage from these substances. As one familiar with medicine, I would say that they are less damaging physiologically than aspirin and penicillin.
Oh. Take LSD.
I don't think that's the case, right? More experiments are needed. There are, however, this was what happened to Weber.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And
that trip.
Probably more than one, yeah.
Wow, who was that?
Some visitor here, a young man, recently. Uh-huh. There are, however, psychological hazards when improperly used. Many are not ready to face the loss of the ego, which often occurs in this experience. In a sense, the psychedelics may be considered as anesthetics to the thinking mind, though there is no inability to think. One finds himself as that of which the thinking mind is only a tool. And to one who has not considered this possibility, it can be frightening. And without understanding and loving support, though often lacking in casual group or self-administration, can result in a psychotic break. In other words, psychedelics, like all other things, are in themselves neither good nor bad. But our experience indicates that there are very important and constructive uses which may be made of them, as well as destructive uses. We hear much of the latter and little of the former. As a result of the public hysteria, which is itself a result of distortion and magnification in the news media of a few spectacular casualties. The editor. It is better if one can take the path without such incentives. If one uses them, the sooner one can renounce them, the better.
You know, they were able to, before they closed down all the research, they were able to cure alcoholics, which nobody can cure.
In fact, they resumed using this recently. I read in the
Times. Really?
Yeah, and they're doing more experiments, psychiatrists and things for patients. They started doing it again, using it again for psychiatric treatments and everything.
That's good.